Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 546. In this episode, Scott talks with Scott Anderson about the State of Virtual Reality 2016.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking with Scott Anderson. He's a virtual reality engineer at game developer Phenomena. How's it going?
It's going all right. How are you, Scott?
I am very well, and I'm very happy to be talking to you because, you know, I read The Verge and I read Ars Technica, and everything says that this is it. Virtual reality is really happening. And it feels like it's been happening for a while, but now they're telling me it really, really, really is happening. Is it going to pop any second now?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I wouldn't be moving into the field if I didn't feel that was the case. So, you know, I think now we're finally at a point where virtual reality headsets are good enough and relatively cheap enough that average consumers can enjoy them. So I think that's a big thing. I think it's also the point where high-end consumer-level hardware can drive these headsets. And there's a lot of different factors that went into that happening this couple of years.
Mm-hmm. I've used an Oculus Rift. I've used the DK or the Developer Kit 1 and 2. I haven't yet seen the final one. But, you know, I saw it getting better and better. But I always had that feeling, and this is, again, speaking as a layman, that I'm holding a phone or a screen in front of my eyes, and it's really close, and I can see the dots.
Yeah, that's been significantly. So I can go into a little bit. You mentioned about the current VR platforms and some ones that are very close on the horizon in the future.
Yeah, maybe you can give me a survey of kind of like from the, because I know that Oculus is the one that everyone thinks about, but I know it's a much bigger world out there.
Yeah, so if you look at some of the history of the development of Oculus specifically, not of VR in general, Oculus got popularized with the Kickstarter and the DK1 or Development Kit 1, as you mentioned, which I am a backer of. So I've been interested in VR for a long time, kind of popularized VR again. But at the same time, and a little bit before that, actually, both Valve, who is the creator of Steam and Half-Life, was doing research into virtual reality and augmented reality devices, and shared a lot of research and technology in virtual reality hardware and software. Shortly after the Development Kit 2 Oculus launched, they were acquired by Facebook. And at that point, Valve kind of decided to partner with HTC to create their own virtual reality headset called Vive. So the major competitors that are out right now in the PC space in VR are the Vive, the HTC Vive, and the Oculus Rift. VR has also been very important in mobile, and both Oculus is involved in mobile with Samsung Gear VR, which is a slightly higher end VR headset. But Google got interested in VR around the time of the release of the Development Kit 2 as well, and made a cheap VR system for Android and iOS called Google Cardboard, which is literally a cardboard box with lenses taped to it.
You know, and when that came out, I legit thought that was a joke. Because, you know, you see funny fake websites made all the time. And I totally was like, oh, this is perfect. It looks just like a Google thing. It's real. And then someone's like, no, that's really a thing. Like, it's cardboard and it actually is pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it's doesn't compare to, you know, we're talking about a price point of really basically free, but I think if you cost and parts are like $10 or $15 for Google Cardboard versus
your phone in a cardboard box.
And versus a HTC Vive, which has, you know, full room tracking of your head and hand position, custom controllers, and it costs $800 and requires a, you know, $1,500 to $2,000 PC. So there's a big spread in terms of cost in these devices right now. Google is working on, it's not released yet, even though there is a preliminary SDK available on their website, for an enhanced version of Cardboard called Daydream, which will be a little bit closer to the Samsung Gear VR, and other higher end mobile devices in terms of power. And it has its own, motion controller, and it's a little bit more fully featured.
So let me break this down again, thinking about this naively, because that's kind of the value that I add here. You take let's go from like the low end and work our way up.
Okay.
With Cardboard, they literally took a phone and came up with a cool, cheap way to hold the phone in front of your face. And I presume that the phone has some, you know, gyroscopes of some kind.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, it's only as good as the little $3 gyroscope inside the thing and the software. So I don't suppose it really knows that I've stood up and walked around, right?
Yeah, it doesn't. So the lower end devices on mobile, and this is universal, with mobile devices, do not do any positional tracking, which is a kind of a key point. And positional tracking is instead of just looking at where you're, facing, like where your head is rotated, what you're looking at, it's also looking at your position, relative to a point in space, usually the center of the room or to a camera, of your head. So you can move your neck, you can walk around, get up and walk around, and it'll still, compensate for that in your view in the virtual world.
Okay. So that means that the phone that's floating in front of my face knows that the phone has been turned, but it, you know, how, like, if you think about it, you hold the phone in front of you and you turn it up, down, left, right, versus holding the phone in front of your face and turning the phone is moving along an arc length, a distance from your face. They can do a little bit of fakery to figure that out, but there's a lot of math going on there.
Yeah.
And it still legitimately doesn't really know that it's going along an arc length. It just thinks it's been turned.
Yes.
Ah. So it's really got, it does not have near enough information to make the decisions it would need to give you a proper VR experience.
Yeah, it does not. And that's some of the issue of, phone VR. As you mentioned before, you could kind of see the pixels on some of the earlier, Oculus development kits. That is a, artifact called screen door effect, or SDE.
Mm.
And it has to do with both the pattern of the pixels on the LCD or OLED screen. And the size of those pixels. So better resolution and better quality screens help with that. And this is why some of the higher end devices require such powerful graphics cards, because they run at very high resolution. They're effectively 1080p per eye. And realistically, if hardware was powerful enough, you'd probably want to go to 4K per eye in VR, but that's probably years off at
right.
this point.
Well, because you've got, when you hold the phone, like right now, I'm literally just holding my iPhone 6 Plus in front of my face. I notice, of course, right away that it's blurry, so I'm going to need lenses to make it clear and close. But also, it can't possibly fill my field of view, so I'm looking through a window. If I, you know what I mean? I'm,
yes.
It doesn't even remotely fill my view. You're saying we would need really 4K each eye, filling the complete field of view before we would get close to trying to fool somebody that they were in a real place.
Yeah, well, I'd say that the current high-end hardware, even though it's not that high resolution, has relatively high FOV.
Field of view.
So, yeah, field of view. So, it's generally not a problem. I think certain people would prefer it to be higher, and there are some experimental and prototype headsets that have up to 210 or I think maybe higher field of view, which gives you much more peripheral vision. So if you imagine the current devices, you basically are kind of, you have a little bit of a tunnel vision, right? You don't get that, your peripheral vision is somewhat black, but the center field of view that you normally are focusing on is perfectly clear. So you still feel pretty immersed. It's kind of like the feeling of looking through goggles. I mean, and in some ways you are looking through goggles, right? But as if you're scuba diving or had ski goggles on, right? Where a little bit of your view is blocked, but it's still clear and it feels immersive.
Well, you know, that's really interesting. As I'm sitting here, I'm looking at our recording stuff, and I'm focused on right now, I'm looking at your name. And I just realized that my other two monitors to my left and right are in the periphery. And as I look at your name, I cannot read what's on the side. So one could argue that the computer doesn't need to work so hard to keep those clear. Why, you know, like, so if you were going to do 4K, it would be silly and a waste of CPU and GPU to not... It would be silly to put full fidelity and full effort into stuff that I'm really looking at in my periphery. So I bet you with clever software tricks, you could focus on the field of view that the person cares about and then kind of blur out and have a gradient of effort as you get out to the edges.
Yeah, and a lot of the work in terms of, and this is actually a good segue to VR development and some of the tools that we use in VR development. But there's currently a lot of active research and constant updates in both game engines, which tend to be the way that people author VR content, just because game engines are the most evolved way of building interactive real-time 3D content, which is...
Right. You don't want to go and build one out of the box. Like, yeah, we're going to make a game. Let's write an engine.
Yeah. Which for interactive VR experiences is kind of the way to go. Film works a little bit differently, and it requires custom camera rigs and some custom editing software, but doesn't necessarily require a full game engine.
Okay.
But in the case of any kind of interactive VR application, they're generally made in one of two game engines, which is Unity 3D and Unreal Engine. But as far as rendering optimizations go, the graphics drivers vendors and the game engine vendors are working together to do things like multi-resolution rendering. So in the peripherals, render them at low resolution versus the center.
I see.
And some of the VR SDKs have tricks to draw or cut out pixels that get either cropped out in the process of being displayed on the HMD, the head-mounted display. Or distorted, because if you can imagine, like a monitor is a flat rectangle, right? Yeah. Generally speaking, or a window.
Sure, I'm looking at a totally flat 30-inch monitor right now. Yeah,
but with VR displays, the lenses actually distort that and give it a pincushion effect. So the either the game engine or the graphics drivers need to invert that distortion, the pincushion lens distortion, and basically they kind of
warped
round image, basically.
Interesting. So those are the kinds of things where, as a game developer, you would hope that you picked a good engine that did that for you. Like, you're making games now at Phenomena. Yeah. You would not want to you would want to educate yourself about this, but hopefully you're not going to have to do that, because you'll go to your game engine and say, this would be a great feature. You should put this at the stack. Not, I shouldn't be thinking about that as an app developer.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and I think that's the advantage of the reason why, you know, there's some statistic I heard where, you know, 95% of games are made with Unity 3D. And if, I definitely recommend, if people are looking to get into, VR development, they download Unity 3D. It's free. Not free as in open source free, but free as in, you know, beer free.
Yeah, yeah.
And download one of the VR SDKs. There's generally built-in support in Unity for virtual reality. So you can actually just check a checkbox in the settings and it'll render to your virtual reality head-mounted display and do head tracking for you.
Really? Out of the box. So you're saying I can get Hello World VR running in an hour?
Yeah, definitely. Or less than an hour, really. Like, I mean, it'd probably take an hour to download Unity and get, you know, a little bit familiar with it. But if you're already familiar with it and have it installed, it's really, you know, start a blank project and you're in VR almost.
Okay. So let's put a pin there for a second. And then now that I know I can get Hello World running in Unity or in an SDK quickly, I can go from cardboard, which is a phone and some cardboard. What would you put up the next step? Gear VR, which is a phone in a smart VR headset with additional what?
So Gear VR, has a much nicer case. It has straps, which help. It has better, optics, which is lenses built in. There's also some extra hardware. And you mentioned earlier about the gyroscope and the sensors in the phone not necessarily being high quality, depending on the phone, et cetera. The Gear VR actually has its own custom set of sensors in it, designed specifically for VR. So you get better tracking
in the harness.
Yes. And I think it has a little bit of other hardware, but that's mostly it.
So you are using the power of the graphics card of your phone. You're using a Samsung Gear.
There's interesting things with it because there's actually the Samsung Gear VR software puts your phone in a special mode that tweaks the GPU and the CPU in weird ways where it uses a little bit more battery power, but it kind of drives a little bit more power of the phone. Because if you can imagine a mobile phone, and this is usually what you want to do in most cases, right? You want it to be very power efficient and not use a lot of battery, even if you're doing something like playing a game or, you know, using a social networking app that might use a lot of battery, right? Or watching a video, et cetera. In the case of VR, because you kind of want that short experience, but you want to get the best experience possible and you want it to be as smooth as possible.
Yeah, kind of. If I'm jacked into the Matrix, get that thing heated up and let's overclock it.
You can go a little bit further. So that's another advantage of Gear VR. Mm-hmm. And Gear VR is only on high-end Samsung phones. So I think it started with the S6. They've done a couple revisions for different high-end Samsung phones. And it's clearly Android-based only in that case.
But is it true that the work is still happening on the phone? The phone is self-contained, right? I'm not plugging my computer into the phone.
All the work is on the phone. The app runs on the phone.
Okay, so then cardboard and Gear VR are mobile VR going kind of up the scale. Then you move into Oculus and Vive. You are tethered or somehow have an umbilical cord into a giant computer with a great video card?
Yeah. Currently, that's how it works. There's actually very active research into wireless high-end PC head-mounted displays. None of that stuff is available yet, but I don't know. It could be in a year or a year and a half. You know, I'm not sure what the timeline is, but it seems like it's an active area of research right now.
I mean, nobody wants to have a giant backpack with a Falcon PC on it, you know.
And the tether and the cord isn't a deal breaker by any means, but it can be annoying, right? It's nice to have the freedom, and that's actually one of the things that mobile VR does better than the high end stuff.
Mm-hmm. So does this mean like I have a what was an amazing machine 5 years ago, but it's still only, what is this? I'm looking at my device manager. I've got an NVIDIA 750. When I go online, and I play lots of games at 1080p, but I go online and they tell me that this isn't even close for VR.
Yeah, it's not.
See, you even paused to break it to me. You were like, I don't want to. Yeah, it sucks. This was the greatest video card in history when I bought it 6 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's so about 3 years ago, I bought a 780 Ti, which is the most powerful, which was the most powerful graphics card at the time.
Right, exactly.
And it barely hit the VR specs when the Vive came out. So, yeah, I mean, so now it's definitely recommended that you get, you know, a 980 or a 1080. The minimum spec is really like a 970 GTX NVIDIA card. But yeah, but AMD has released a card that is like around $200, which is a little bit more reasonable. It's still not the cheapest thing in the world, but it's better than a $500 or $600 graphics card that is powerful enough to run VR. So you're kind of seeing the thing where, you know, graphics card performance increases quickly. The VR min spec was set at a very high level because... So previously to my job at Phenomena, I worked as a graphics engineer on Call of Duty, actually. So big AAA game console game. In that job, 60 frames per second was a big deal. You know, everyone is,
buttery smooth.
At VR, in the high end stuff, in the mobile stuff, 60 frames per second is a requirement. If you don't want to make people sick.
So it's not just about gamers insisting on 60 frames.
If you drop even slightly below the target frame rate, you will make people physically ill potentially or most likely.
Okay.
So, and in the high,
and you're doing it in two eyes.
And there's tricks to, reduce the cost of that for two eyes, but it's still two eyes. For the high end stuff, it needs to run at 90 frames per second. So which is kind of unheard of in video game frame rates. Years ago, Google was talking about their target for a high performing web request was 200 milliseconds, right? And time from, you know, when you type in a query into Google, and obviously Google's doing a lot of work and that's a pretty reasonable time frame, I think, for what's happening when you do a Google query. Mm-hmm. But for high end VR at 90 FPS, that means you have 11 milliseconds to do everything, to do all of your game logic, physics, render the world, etc., and you have to hit that number, otherwise people start to get sick. And the effect you get is this thing called judder, where it feels kind of like as you move your head, it's not moving at the same rate as your physical head is moving. like your eyes kind of are trailing behind where your head is, so it's not a pleasant effect at all.
Someone told me once that literally like 10 to 20 milliseconds is the difference between people going, wow, that's amazing, and people getting immediately and violently ill.
Yes, it is. Definitely.
Like the brain rejects it. Like your body says, oh, you're in the Matrix. That's amazing. Versus, oh my God, what are you doing to my, you know, this is not okay. Whatever this input is you're giving me, this is so bad. Yeah. And it's milliseconds that makes the difference. And the part that makes me so sad, though, is that we talk about this 750 Ti video card that I paid so much money for. It's $140 on eBay right now. You know what I mean? You can get it $100 on Craigslist. Does that mean 5 years from now I can get 2016 top-of-the-line VR for a couple hundred bucks? But now it's going to cost me a couple grand, right?
But I'm hoping that both of the price of the headsets and the price of the hardware comes down very soon. I mean, it's interesting because... later in the year and into early next year. So we talked about mobile and PC VR, but game consoles, obviously games are a big application in VR. They're not going to be the only one. I think there's a lot of room for interesting creative applications and training industrial applications as well. But games are obviously a big application and will continue to be. So game consoles will support VR. So PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 4 Pro, which is a more powerful version of PlayStation 4, will support PlayStation VR, which is Sony's own customized headset that they're selling. And then Microsoft is also coming out with a new Xbox sometime next year. That will
Project Scorpio
that will support some VR headset. They haven't quite announced which one, but or
right,
both.
Some kind of thing. And everyone wants to be the winner, right? Like Oculus Rift and Vive. So we talked about Gear VR. Oculus Rift and Vive are different, if I understand correctly, because Vive knows where you are in the room and insists that you install stuff up at the top of your ceiling so it can position you in a room. Well, isn't it true that Rift is more of a sitting thing?
Yeah, Rift is seated, but they're because of the success of the Vive, they're moving away from that. So my game Luna, actually, which I showed at PAX, which is Penny Arcade Expo, this past weekend, is it's kind of a creative musical puzzle game. And it's designed for... So Vive shipped with, and this is one of the reasons why it's more expensive, it shipped with tracked controllers, which effectively give you hands in the virtual world. So before Vive, outside of some special case hardware and like things that didn't necessarily come with the system, like Leap Motion and Razer Hydra, you didn't get hands, which is a huge thing because as soon as you get hands in the 3D world, you can manipulate things, you can pick up objects. It just puts you in the space more and it gives you a lot more opportunity in terms of both applications and games. Yes. Like you can imagine, having a GUI, but not having a touchscreen or a mouse, right? Without the controllers.
Well, it's funny that you say that because, you know, people, I'm a Windows person and people always, I always tease Mac people because like, I like my iPad. So I always touch my Mac and it's like, hey, how do you all survive? Like that's, you're missing a fundamental sense. And then I was playing with an Oculus Rift. I was playing like Eve or some space game and I immediately looked down and my hands weren't there. I was like, well, there's my knees. But my hands are missing. And then it's like, oh, well, you have to move with your mouse. And I'm like, it's like, it reminds you that you aren't really jacked into the Matrix.
So track controllers make a huge difference. So Oculus is kind of, we were showing our game on Oculus Rift with their controllers called Oculus Touch, which will be a separate addition to the headset, which are coming out sometime later this year. And you know, once again, it adds a whole new layer to the whole system and it adds extra cost to the whole system also, unfortunately. But, you know, it's, I think it's a big deal. And if you're doing development in Unity, for example, in order to support the controllers, you have to download the custom SDKs for the platform holders. So,
Well, your game Luna. And we'll have a link to the show notes at phenomena.com/Luna. Okay. It's meant to be tactile. Like it's not just, hey, look, we made a VR game. It's supposed to be, you know, you're supposed to explore and use gestures. Are you going to are you and other developers going to target one? Like we're going to be like Luna best on Oculus or Luna best on Vive? Or do you have to go and write the code to make it work as best it can on everyone's headset? And it scales up or down based on what kind of positional controllers you can get.
It really depends on the type of game you're making. Because our game is so tactile, we're really focusing on systems with controllers, right? So we probably won't support Oculus Rift without the touch controllers. But at the same time, there are ways to support everything if you want to put the effort into it. And you lose something. But in mobile VR, for example, or with Oculus Rift without the controllers, the focus is on like gaze-based interactions, which means you look at something and what you have like a little cursor in the center of your view and whatever you're focused on in your cursor, you can interact with either by hitting a controller button or in the case of Gear VR, you have you have a button on the side of the headset that you can tap. Or clicking a mouse, et cetera.
And these are all, what's funny about this is that you start to realize that like making a virtual universe or a virtual world is really complicated. Like think about what you just described. Like I want to take an action on something I look at. Right now I just look at stuff, but I'm going to have to move my head rather than actually looking, point a dot at something and then take an action. And everyone's going to solve that differently until we actually solve gaze tracking and include that in one of these headsets.
Yeah.
But then theoretically, though, if you start checking off the list of stuff that one needs, you know, super high res, no judder, you know, room tracking, body tracking, maybe the ability to walk on something. Like I want to put on a wireless headset, take a fake plastic gun, and I want to run around my garage without bumping into the door and play Call of Duty. Like, that's the dream.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, so there's a couple interesting avenues there. So one thing that hasn't really happened yet, but is being actively developed, mm-hmm. is inside out tracking. So you can imagine
inside out tracking.
Yeah, you can imagine that, like, in the case of the Oculus or the Vive, you have outside in tracking where effectively there's cameras or lasers, you know, scanning your room, or cameras like looking at you and doing some computer vision stuff to figure out where you are. But inside out tracking would be a camera on your device looking at your room, scanning the room, figuring out what the geometry of your room is and how far you moved. This is a much harder problem, from a computer vision standpoint, I guess, than, the inverse. But, I think that opens up the ability to move around a little bit more in your space and do more interesting things there. And there's also these ideas of, location-based VR, mm-hmm. where you get a much, like obviously, you know, one of the issues with the Vive is that most people don't have the room for the full tracking area in the Vive. I definitely don't.
Yeah, exactly.
In my house, right? I have a small tracking area in an office. Right. But if you go to a location-based thing, they can rent out a whole warehouse or a whole stadium, right? And track you, and you can run around pretty freely in some of these, experiences without, like, you know, fear of running into a wall or, you know, bumping.
Exactly. Which is why even now in 2016, we still play laser tag, you know, when we go out, because they have a warehouse. And so that means that it could be, maybe overstating things, but it could be the return of the arcade in the sense of I got my $1,000 VR at home and my $10,000 one at the mall.
Yeah, definitely. There's kind of been a rise of these VR cafes because of the cost of the headsets and the, there's a lot of demand for people to just want to try them out or like occasionally play VR experiences.
Cool. So people can learn about Luna and Phenomena and the games that you all make there at FUNOMENA.com. And there's a bunch of games that you're working on. The one you're working on now is Luna, L-U-N-A. We'll put a link to that in the show notes and people can watch that. I know that there was a teaser trailer released recently.
Yeah, and there's actually some gameplay from PAX that Polygon put out, and I recommend that people take a look at that also as well.
And what do you recommend? You think which VR headset should I be saving up for right now?
Right now, I think both the Oculus Rift and Touch, even though it's not out yet, the Vive and PSVR, which is also not out yet, will all be good options for different reasons. I own a Vive just because it was kind of the first to do track controllers, but I also have a Oculus Rift at home as well. So, you know, I'm like kind of just like have everything. But I think if you were going to buy something right now, like if you're going to go to the store and buy a headset this minute, Vive is probably your best option. If you're going to wait a little bit until next year, definitely the Oculus Rift or with the controllers or, PlayStation VR. If you are more of a console gamer and want to play like in your living room would be good options as well.
It sounds like it is, I would be jumping in and picking something. I have to pick a horse in this race. So it sounds like there isn't a simple answer, but if I pick something big, a big company with a lot of support behind it, I am definitely going to have fun. And I think that if I can get something where I can get the games on Steam, then I'll probably be okay.
Yeah, definitely. And you can get games for both Vive and Oculus Rift on Steam. So
there you go. Very cool. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Oh, it was great talking to you.
Very cool. That's Scott Anderson, virtual reality engineer at Phenomena, working on Luna. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.